fucking hell, it always takes ages to start recording.
Hello and welcome to the Anti-Football Podcast. My name is Chris, and as always, I am joined by the insatiable, the incredible, the...
I have never been described as those.
The absolutely, you know, the glorious, the brilliantly talented, you know, the amazing, just absolutely incredible. I think I've already said incredible. I'm joined by Harry. Harry, how are you doing, my son?
Good. Now, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I feel like you don't get enough love on this podcast. So, I just thought I'd, try to G you up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Yeah. I feel like you don't get the credit you deserve.
You deserve all the credit. You do, like, everything.
Yeah, but I don't know anything. You actually know stuff about football. I don't. Like, I don't know. I don't know about pissing, like, what's happening in Ligue 1, like, or Serie A. Like, and if a player comes over from one of those leagues, I just resort to, football cliches. Like, could he do it on a cold rainy night in Stoke? Whereas you'd actually know about the player. So, you have all the knowledge here.
Who said that? Was it Tony Pulis who said that?
I can't remember who coined the phrase. It's one of my personal favourite cliches, Messi couldn't do it on a cold rainy night in Stoke.
How the hell has he got a job, Tony Pulis?
Made famous by Andy Gray, so obviously, brilliant man Andy Gray was, so fucking hell.
Well, the one who worked for Sky, do you mean?
You what?
The one who worked for Sky?
Yeah, the commentator.
Oh, he's a mob.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Yeah, but he was the one who suggested that Messi would find it difficult on a cold, rainy night in Stoke. So, yeah.
Because obviously it doesn't rain as well.
Exactly, yeah. And it just shows, the vast knowledge that Andy Gray possesses in terms of football. But anyway, we're getting to some actual football then instead of bashing on Andy Gray and football cliches, because we've got quite a few games to get into. We might as well start off with Leicester, only managing to draw against Southampton and, with games against Man United, Chelsea, Spurs and the FA Cup final against Chelsea coming up. They really could have done with this win, Leicester.
Yeah, it seems they're very inconsistent at the moment, Leicester. I mean, they're thankful of that, sort of amazing first half of the season, that this sort of strange run of form has kept them still in the top four somehow. But I think a lot of credit does have to go to Saints and Haskell Hill, because they had to do the job pretty early. Well, they had to do it with 10 men for the majority of the matches.
Definitely. I mean, Yannick Vestergaard's red card, early in the 10th minute. I mean, I don't think there can be many complaints, really. He was the last man. It was, a brilliant defensive performance. I think Salisu, when he came on, I thought he was brilliant, personally. I think his, distribution was very good. And he looked pretty dominant in the air, and to be honest with you, I'm surprised that he hasn't had more chances this season, Salisu. So I don't know if it's injuries or what. But they held off well. Southampton, they took the chances when they need to. Ward-Prowse obviously getting the penalty. And I think they're just frustrated, Leicester. As we'll get into, with some of the Champions League games, that sometimes that's what you need to do, just grind out the win.
Absolutely. I think it's strange that a team can beat them, the very same team beats them 9-0 and then really struggles to score on the second leg. I suppose the pressure's on now for them to get Champions League with a lot of teams on their arse.
You look at last season, they beat Southampton 9-0 and then they went and lost at the other side, so,
Oh, yeah, that was during the Southampton resurgence where they sort of changed around their 11.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just going back a little bit to Leicester's form, the last five league games have been two wins, two losses and a draw. So I think that really sums up, you know, the inconsistency towards the end of the season. I mean, Rodgers' teams always do tend to tail off towards the end. I mean, you know, they're definitely not making it easier for themselves. You know, a win here and a win against Newcastle would get them top four. So, like, you know, it's just mind-boggling that, you know, they can't do it against, you know, I don't want to say the easy team, but I mean, compared to Chelsea and Man United, Southampton is the easier game. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. They could have got it done before they sort of had a final sort of prepare for and coming up against the other runners for their spot. I think we've got to talk about Iheanacho as well.
Obviously. You know, he's been in some brilliant forms, Iheanacho. You know, obviously he, you know, gave away the penalty in this game, and I don't think there can be too many. I don't think there can be too many complaints really about that. But you know, you just look at his form. You know, ever since, you know, the beginning of March time, you can say he's just been on absolute fire. You know, getting an hat trick against Sheffield United, getting a brace against Man United, getting a brace against West Ham. You know, getting a goal and assist against Crystal Palace. You know, even getting an assist here, you know, he's just been in tremendous form. And I feel like, you know, he's sort of proved that, you know, when he's played in the correct position, he can thrive. Like, because he's not an out-and-out goal scorer. He's, you know, well, he's far closer to a number 10 than a number 9. You know, and that's, you know, when he's put in that position, he can definitely, you know, he's definitely Leicester quality. You know, he could definitely get into a top four team.
Agreed, yeah. He was in the top four team at one point. They saw
him.
I guess it's a different Iheanacho now.
Mm.
Someone who's getting. But if he moves to a top four team, will he actually get the game time? I mean, we've seen plenty of players such as Danny Ings move from Burnley to Liverpool and didn't get the game time.
Mm. Well, I think Danny Ings was very unlucky. I think he probably would have got the game time, but if it wasn't for that horrible injury. And then Klopp came in whilst Danny Ings was injured. So, I mean, that's not a great start, is it? Right. So, yeah. I think if Rodgers had stayed, and I think if he'd hadn't have got that injury, I think we'd have seen Danny Ings topping scoring charts for Liverpool for quite a few seasons in a row. But yeah, you know, again, just a disappointing result for Leicester. I mean, you know, they did everything right. They had, 1.95 XG. They had 70% of the ball. They had 23 shots with 9 on target. You know, they dominated basically every facet of the game, but they just couldn't break down Southampton besides that one goal, obviously. Which, you know, when you're coming up against the third leakiest defence in the league, when they're already down to 10 men, you know, that's, you know, it's not a great sign, especially when you've got some huge games coming up, including a cup final.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe they're looking past Southampton. That could have also been an issue, and they're looking towards putting, you know, going all guns blazing in their, you know, sort of games coming up, the big games, sort of the 6-pointers.
Mm.
But, they, like you said, they should have had the job done then, and then tonight, and then they can afford to go all guns blazing. You know, against Chelsea, and then not so much in the league.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, they could have already had the Champions League slots wrapped up, and they probably should have already had these Champions League slots wrapped up. So, you know, it's definitely going to be disappointing. I think, you know, they pretty much are, you know, confirmed for the Champions League. I mean, you know, they're 5 points ahead of West Ham. Which, you know, I can't see there being that much of a point swing But, you know, if they lose to Chelsea, you know, that's only puts West Ham 2 points behind them should they win. And West Ham really do have favourable fixtures. So the job definitely isn't done by any means. It's definitely going to be an interesting end to the season when it comes to that top four. I think, you know, all of West Ham, Chelsea, Leicester, and maybe even Liverpool, those, you know, four teams really, it's going to be an interesting battle to see who gets Champions League next season, who gets Europa League, and who's in the brand new Europa Conference League. Ooh, that's exciting, isn't it?
That's just embarrassing.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, don't get me wrong, I'd want Burnley to be a part of it, but, like, you know, it's not great.
I mean, the whole qualification thing for it seems like a massive headache in itself.
Mm.
We only get one spot, and then someone like Faroeans gets three spots. So, three of their teams have got to go through all kinds of playoffs, and it just seems less of a headache to just not qualify for it.
I know, yeah.
But it's extra revenue, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, it's a chance for teams, you know, who wouldn't normally get those big away days. It's a chance for them to go and get it. Like, you know, I mean, there are some ridiculous things. I mean, I think that Holland gets five spaces or something like that.
Okay.
Jeez. You know, but, like, yeah, it's, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I'm sure we will find some good teams in there, but is anyone really going to care about the Europa Conference League?
Well,
I mean, I'm sure it'd be nice to win the first one, but after that, like,
it's just money grabbing from UEFA, isn't it? They just want that TV money.
Yeah, true. But, you know, it's more revenue for the clubs, so that's never a bad thing.
It's going to be shown the same time as Europa League, and, you know, if a neutral has a choice, they're going to pick Europa League game.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, like, I mean, as it stands in the league, you know, considering seventh is probably going to get Europa Conference League, Liverpool currently in seventh. And if you think, you know, they're going to come up against a team like, I don't know, someone like Bayer Leverkusen is just someone I'm guessing would be around about there, because I know they've had a bit of a crap season. You know, you're more likely to watch that than, like, Slavia Prague versus Apoel. So, you know.
But, yeah, but there's English teams on, isn't there, in Europe League?
Well, yeah, I know, but, like, you know, I'm just saying it's not, they're not all going to be, you know, tin pot games.
Yeah.
There will be some good fixtures, I'm sure of it.
It's just a bizarre thing.
Mm. Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I think that, you know, having the Champions League and the Europa League, I think that was perfectly fine. You know, I don't see the need for a third one. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be some entertainment to be had out of it. I'm just waiting to see what the new theme will be. Because the Champions League and Europa League themes are bangers, so.
It's the Conference League. Conference on there.
Yeah, that'll be it, I'm sure.
The Europa League one, I can't even remember. Like, the Champions League one, that's, like, iconic.
The Europa League one's like the, you know,
Yeah,
that one. Yeah, that one's great. Unpopular opinion, I think that one's better than the Champions League anthem.
Definitely unpopular opinion there.
Yeah. But, you know, we need some love for the Europa League anthem, which is great. Anyway, we're going to move on to Palace versus Man City. Palace managed to hold Man City for a good stretch of the game, to be fair to them. You know, that defence really, you know, held their own. I don't know if you can hear any screaming coming from outside, and I apologise if you do. But yeah, that sort of 4-5-1 that they deployed, you know, Zaha on the left, Townsend on the right. It really worked well in neutralising City. who played a really attacking team, I'll have to say. But, you know, two quick fire breakthroughs, an Aguero goal and a Ferran Torres goal. And rotated Man City side managed to pick up all 3 points. What were your thoughts on this game?
Pretty bog standard result, I think. There were a few chances created by Palace, but I don't think there were much to sort of face City, really. I mean, they did force more saves out of Edison versus Guaita, but I mean, you're always going to back Aguero to score over the likes of a Benteke.
I don't know. Benteke has actually been quite good this season, I think.
Yeah, but on paper, you're gonna back Aguero to score.
Oh yeah, of course. But you know, all I'm saying is that I think that Benteke, you know, he's looked a lot better than he has in previous seasons, I will say. You know, I think he's got like a goal every 200 minutes or something like that this season.
Okay. Wow. I didn't. Okay. Wow.
But yes, I see your point that, you know, on paper this Man City team should be beating this Palace team comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get your opinion as well on Aymeric Laporte. It seems with this Diaz and Stones partnership that's formed for Man City, you know, I think Diaz really makes John Stones a better player. This has kind of left Aymeric Laporte out of the team. I mean, you can see his partner in Nathan Ake in defence, which, you know, third and fourth choice centre-halves. You know, he's really been left out in the cold this season as Laporte, which, you know, when you consider last season, we were talking about him, you know, on the same level as Virgil van Dijk almost. You know, it's a strange one. And you've got to think, you know, Laporte perhaps isn't too pleased with this and, you know, could potentially be looking to move on, because he's definitely good enough to, you know, start for a top European side.
He should be starting at City, to be, you know, put it bluntly. I mean, I think Stones is overrated. I think, like you said, Diaz makes him look better than he is.
Well, I don't think it's a case of Diaz makes him look better than he is. I think it's a case that they have such a good partnership that he's, you know, become a far better player, Stones.
Mm-hmm. There was a point, I don't know if that's still relevant, that Diaz and Stones have scored more goals together than they have conceded. So,
yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's still the case. I'm not entirely sure. I highly doubt it is. But yeah, I mean, what a phenomenal stat that is! Like, you know,
yeah. I mean, the fact they're picking Ake over him—that's, I suppose, yeah, they did spend 50 million on him, but they spent quite a bit on Laporte, if I recall.
Yeah, it was like 60 million on Laporte, which, you know, 110 million on two backup centre backs is, you know, it's, you know, a fair chunk of change, I think it's fair to say. But yeah, I think it was just a case of Pep wanting to rotate the team, you know, have some fresh legs ready for the PSG game. You know, as we saw with Ferran Torres out wide, you know, the young winger, is he a winger, is he a forward? I mean, he's played in both positions this season. He's not had too many minutes this season. But when he has, I think he's looked all right as Ferran Torres. I think, you know, I don't think he's quite at that, you know, Man City level yet. But I think he's definitely a decent, you know, young winger. I mean, he's only turned 21 a couple of months back, if I recall correctly, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's not the finished article yet. I mean, I think City know that, and I hope City fans know that. I mean, how much did they buy him for? 20 million? I mean, they seem like a bargain.
I was about to say, they bought him on the cheap because, you know, Valencia's very, you know...
stupid.
Well, no, I think it's just their definitely. They're in a lot of financial trouble, I will say.
Are they? They're owned by the guy who owns Salford.
What, Gary Neville?
No, that the Taiwanese guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, I'm joking.
No.
Yeah, because they were going to build that new stadium, and that's been, you know, sort of abandoned now, and you know.
Why? What's wrong with them starting?
Well, I think they say that it's basically falling apart.
Oh, okay. So it needs work.
Yeah. But yeah, it was definitely a bargain from Man City's perspective at the very least. And I know they've gone in for, I have no idea what his name is, but that, I think he's 17-year-old Brazilian winger.
Oh, Kakai, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Him and another lad they got. I think it was an Argentinian. Fluminense, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, I mean, they'll probably loan him out considering he's only 17. But, you know, like, it could definitely be interesting to see, you know, if they could develop. I mean, you know, as we'll, I'm sure we'll get into in the PSG game, Pep has a knack for developing young talent, I will say. But yeah, is there what else you want to add on to this game?
Well, I'm just looking at this Keke. He's been dubbed as the new Neymar.
Oh, yeah, but that happens.
That always happens,
yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you know, how many players have been dubbed the new Messi? Like,
wouldn't Bebe dubbed the new Ronaldo?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I think if you give kids like that, you know, the new something, that's a lot to live up to as a 15, 16, 17-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. It's like how we spent years calling them, you know, the pissing golden generation for England.
Wait, in reference to this team? What, the current setup now?
No, I'm on about, like, you know, the one with Beckham and that lot.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, individually, they lived up to their names, I guess, some of them, but not as a group in England. I mean, Beckham went on to go to Real Madrid, PSG, Milan.
Oh, no, I'm not saying the players themselves flopped. I'm just on about, you know, how they performed in England shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that entire generation sort of flopped internationally.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's move on to Brighton and Leeds, where Brighton actually managed to pick up I think it's fair to say a surprising win here, which essentially, you know, all but mathematically guarantees them safety. They're on 37 points now. It was surprising, really, because they really outplayed Leeds.
Yeah, I mean, Potterball finally playing off. Welbeck's kind of... I don't want to say he's back to his best, because his best was at Arsenal before injuries.
Best was at Arsenal?
There was a point where he was getting a few goals here and there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that was better than, you know, when he was linking up with Wayne Rooney and getting, you know, double figures, you know.
Okay. He's 30 years old and he's only just hit 100 career goals. Like, he's not... For a striker, that's awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's had a lot of struggles with injuries. And, you know, an even bigger setback was when he played for Sunderland. But you know, yeah, it's always been a case with Welbeck where, you know, well, it seems he's like he's been around forever. And also, you know, like, he seems like the type of player who, you know, you'll bring on Welbeck, you'll have him on the bench, and you'll think, oh, you know, bring Welbeck on, he's a good plan B, and then he never is.
One thing I can't fault him for, he does give it all.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's just, oftentimes, he doesn't have that sort of end product.
Yeah. I think he's probably best working as a secondary striker because he does all the work. And he just needs to find someone. Well, unfortunately, Brighton don't have anyone at the moment because Mope, the amount of chances that Brighton have had that they've had, they should have put away, I think, sums up their season. But if they can find someone for Welbeck to link up with that, you know, they can help the find, that'd be amazing.
Certainly
help the potable ideology.
Yeah, I think, you know, Maupay, you know, I mean, he's got 8 goals, which, you know, it's not much to, it's not to be sneezed at, that it's a decent, just a decent little tally, that, for a player, you know, who's, you know, in a side that doesn't really create an awful lot. Well, I'm not going to say it doesn't create an awful lot, but, you know, Brighton's a bottom half team. Right? So to get, you know, double figures or close to double figures is decent. I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he got double figures last season as well. So, you know, I think he's a decent little forward. But like you say, he does tend to miss quite a few big chances. But I think that's just Brighton as a whole. I don't think that's just on Morphe.
Suitable recruits in the summer. I think they need to stick with Potter. I think they certainly create a lot with Trossard and Gross and what's the other one? Such a proper, you know, your handback. They've only got great players, they just need finishers. And you know, 8 goals does seem a lot for Brighton, but they should, he should be well into the double figures.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, I mean, you know, I still like Maupay. I think he's a decent little forward. But, you know, like you say, he does miss quite a few big chances.
I just say look for someone to, you know, start ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think, you know, there's a lot of big clubs looking at Yves Bissouma. And you got to think, you know, is it worth cashing in on Yves Bissouma? Because you'd assume they'd be able to get, you know, a good 40, 50 million pounds for him. Would it be worth cashing in on that and sort of bringing in 2 or 3 new players? Or is the influence of Bissouma sort of too much to, you know, afford to lose?
Yeah, he's too big to lose. He's a great foundation player to build a bond.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree with you there.
Their issues lie up top. They should not look to sell on players unless their name is Shane Duffy. That's about it.
Yeah, he's just come back from his loan, hasn't he, at Celtic. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not had the best of times in Celtic, I will say. And I mean, you know, when they've already got, you know, 3 top quality centre backs in, you know, Dunk, Webster, and White, you got to think Shane Duffy, he's, if he does stay at Brighton, he's definitely going to be a bit part player. I don't think he's going to be, you know, a feature like he has been in the past couple of seasons.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I like Dan Byrne as well, but he's more of a left back to them.
You see, I really don't like Dan Byrne. I just think for someone that size, and he just seems to lose everything. Like, I don't know. I'm personally really not a fan of Dan Byrne. I don't know if that's just because he's being played at left back or what, but, you know, I just personally, I'm not a fan. But, you know, I think that, you know, they definitely have a solid enough back three to Brighton. And, you know, as, you know, they're only a small club of Brighton. You know, there's only a certain caliber of player that you can bring in to be backup. And I think, you know, the likes of Byrne and Duffy are probably as good backups as you're going to get for the position that Brighton are in.
Well, with the recent Tottenham departure, they're looking at Graham Potter, but one of the directors of football basically said that Potter can't leave. Which
he can't leave, as in, like, he cannot, you know, leave. It would be catastrophic or it's physically impossible for him to leave.
Yes.
You're saying yes. I don't know which one you're saying yes to.
The latter. It is impossible for him to leave. Right. Mm. I don't know, you know, why they think they've got the authority over him, or if they think that, you know,
I think recently he signed like a 6-year contract or something stupid like that. So there was probably some sort of clause in there, maybe, that he can't, like, walk out 1 year into that or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd
give. That's just me speculating there. Like, you know.
If I'm the Brighton owners, I'm chucking however much is feasibly possible. Because what he's going to do with that club, if given the correct funds, is take them from relegation battlers to a firm mid-table club, and possibly even further.
Yeah, I mean,
the amount of chances they create, it really would. And, you know, they've had great performances against us, against United. You know, I mean, if they're competing against those sort of clubs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tricky one. I mean, personally, you know, I think Potter, thing is, I want to say he's overrated, but that sort of implies that he's bad. Like, I don't think he's a bad manager at all. In fact, I think he's a good manager, because, you know, there's no right or wrong way to play football. You just have to play the best you can to, you know, get the most out of your team. And I think the way that Potter, you know, sets up, I think that does get more out of his team than, you know, Houghton did, for example. But I just don't see him as, like, this, you know, football genius that, you know, he's, you know, going to be top, you know, going to be winning league titles as a manager.
No.
You know, the way that, you know, some people bang on about him, you'd think he was the reincarnation of Pep Guardiola, like, you know.
No, I'm just saying he could take Brighton to a level above that they should, you know, you'd think of a club like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, there's a ceiling with Brighton. Like, yeah. You know. It's like the majority of clubs, you know, the majority of clubs outside of the top six, and then maybe like Everton, Leicester, you know, and that's probably it. The majority of those, you know, well, all of those clubs, apart from the ones that I've mentioned, they're always, you know, in danger of getting relegated at the start of a season, you know. So, you know, most of them probably will get relegated at some point in a season. So I think there's, you know, there's definitely a ceiling, especially at a club like Brighton, who isn't the biggest club, who doesn't have, you know, the massive fan base to call upon. You know, there's always going to be a ceiling there.
Yeah. don't know who Brighton can look at player wise, because Arsenal are kind of at the level Brighton at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that because bigger teams are going for championship players, that's making championship players' values explode. Like, you know, you look earlier at like Dan James going to Man United, and then that sort of bled into this season where you've got Benrahma going to West Ham for 25 million, you've got Watkins going to Villa for 33 million plus add-ons. You know, like you've got
Aaron Ramsdale,
yeah. I mean, that's sort of different because, you know, he was from a relegated club. But yeah, another one, Nathan Ake, yeah. I mean, they're sort of different because they're from, you know, newly relegated clubs. Yeah. But I'm on about players who, you know, have performed in the Championship. You know, they've done well and then, you know, they've got called up. So someone like, maybe not Buendia because they're going up, but, you know, someone like if Ivan Toney doesn't go up, or, you know, if Dan Juma, if Bournemouth don't go up, Adam Armstrong, Michael Olise, Kiefer Moore, people like that.
Isn't Kiefer Moore a bit old?
Well, I think he's old, old.
No, but he's 28, and I think there's a part of point at that, 26 maybe.
Yeah.
For the top six at least.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm not saying he's going to get a big move. I mean, but I'm saying, you know, a 20 goal striker in the Championship is going to go for at least, you know, £25 million now. Whereas a couple of seasons ago, you know, you're looking at Chris Wood got nearly 30 goals in the Championship, I think, for Leeds, who weren't a top club at all at the time. And he went to Burnley for 15 million. And I think that was one of the like record sales from a Championship club at that point. So, you know, the Championship market has exploded. And I think that's the problem for teams like Brighton and, you know, the teams around them, you know, like Palace, Southampton, Newcastle, Burnley, teams around them, is that the Championship market has exploded. So you can't get those cheap, you know, bargains anymore because people know about the Championship now.
Is David Brooks not a wanted commodity anymore?
I mean, he hasn't really stood out, I'd say, in the Championship this season. I think he's definitely been outshone by Dan Juma on the other side. I mean, he's been all right, and I'm sure, you know, if Bournemouth don't go up, there will be people sniffing around, considering, you know, he's still young. But, you know, he's definitely not, you know, his value's dropped significantly from the summer. I think it's fair to say.
Okay. Because I know United wanted him. At least that was one of the big clubs that wanted him.
Yeah, I think if it would have been another situation of, you know, Dan James, if he went to Man United. I don't think he's Man United quality. I think we'd see, you know, a couple of good games for him, but, you know, eventually, I think, not found out is the word, but I think, you know, Man United would have been a step too far for him. I think David Brooks, at this time anyway, you know, where he's at the moment, it's, you know, probably at like Aston Villa level, maybe. I think, you know, sort of that mid-table Premier League club. I think that's where he's at the moment. I think he definitely has potential to be, maybe not like a top club, but someone like, you know, like a Tottenham, for example. I think he's, you know, could slot in there in a couple of years' time. But I think, you know, as it stands, you know, he's definitely being outshone by, you know, like Buendia, Dan Juma, and even Ismail Assar in the second half of this season. You know, first half of the season he was pretty poor, but the second half. Yeah. You know, the first half of this season under Ivic, he really struggled, did Assar. I mean, he, you know, I think he only had like two goals in like 15 games or something like that. But under Sisco, he's absolutely flourished. You know, he's moved him back out to his natural right wing position, and you know, he's really shone. And you know, I think that he'll definitely be key to whether Watford manage to stay up next season. And if they don't, then I think he'll definitely be on the move. I think he's far too good to spend more than one season in the Championship. So, and the same with Buendia with Norwich as well. I mean, Buendia is, you know, it's probably one of the best seasons from a player, you know, in the Championship ever, really. I mean, there's not many that really stack up to the quality that he's shown this season. I think, you know, the only one in recent memory that really stands out is probably Ruben Neves. Yeah, he's had an absolute immense season as Buendia.
I was going to say, how well is Guay down at Swansea?
I think he's done all right. I mean, to be honest with you, I've not watched too much Swansea, or at least compared to, you know, the other teams around about that area. But, I mean, you know, he's done all right as Guay. I mean, you know, he's been a regular at centre-half for him. But, you know, I wouldn't really say shone. Maybe a Swansea fan would be able to tell, say differently, but, you know, he's been all right, I guess, you know.
Would Freddie Woodman be in contention for the Newcastle goalkeeper spot?
I think it's a tough one, really, because I think he is probably a Premier League quality goalkeeper, Woodman. I think, you know, he does have a mistake in him, but I think he is quality. But I don't think he gets in ahead of Dubravka or Darlow, personally. But yeah, just, you know, really the point I was just making there was that there is tons and tons of quality in the Championship, and clubs have started to figure that out, and as a result of that, the Championship market's exploded.
The only one thing I've watched from the Championship is always the playoffs. I always watch that.
Yeah, the playoffs are always interesting. I'll always try and go out of my way to watch the playoffs for every division in the Football League, really. It's, you know, the playoffs are always a, you know, they're always great, the playoffs.
Also the Championship one that I watched, and I did watch some non-league ones because of PC. We went out to Salford.
You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I wasn't expecting you to be you know, watching League Two playoffs, but I always love watching the playoffs for every division level. Because it's more often than not, the best team doesn't win. The best team over the course of the league doesn't win the playoffs. You know, it's all about momentum going into them.
Well, I imagine it's about emotions, how you handle the day. I mean, going to Wembley is massive, and I guess the fans not being there, maybe the emotions doesn't get you as much.
Yeah.
Because they can exacerbate or help you get through that 90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, I mean, I just look at Fulham, though, last season. I mean, they probably had the best squad in the Championship, and they definitely had the most money. But, you know, they finished fourth and they only just scraped through the playoffs, even though, you know, Brentford were the far superior team that season. Right? So it just shows there's not, you know, there's always a lot, you know, there's always a lot of factors when it comes to the playoffs, you know. I mean, think when Huddersfield got promoted, I think it was the record for lowest points total to be promoted or something like that. But cause it's just all about momentum. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think especially the Championship playoff this season, I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch. I think you've got four quality teams in there. And it'll be interesting to see who gets promoted. I really hope it isn't Bournemouth because, you know, A, Bournemouth's a crap away day, and also to have three the three relegated teams come straight back up is a little bit boring.
You've been to Bournemouth.
Yeah, it's not a great away day. Well, I think it might be because it was a long way. But, yeah.
I've been there a few times, but I've sat in there for a minute. What's them versus Wickham and them versus Charlton?
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't call it... Do you call it Vitality or Dean Court?
I tend to flip-flop because I don't have... Well, obviously, I don't have that attachment to Bournemouth, but, like, you know, it's not like St. James's where, you know, you've been calling it St. James's for years. Like, they're pretty much shot up out of nowhere, Bournemouth, so, like, you know. I'm sure Bournemouth fans will call it Dean Court, not the Vitality.
It's like West Ham fans, they called it the bowling ground, didn't they?
Yeah, but it was just Upton Park, right? Yeah, and I mean, you know, St. James's, no one calls St. James's the Sports Direct Arena, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, anyway, we've really gone off track there from Brighton and Leeds. We're going to move on to what's the next game? We'll move on to Chelsea and Fulham. I'm sure you'll have quite a bit to say about young Kai Havertz in this game, so I'll let you have the floor.
Okay. Deschamps is starting to harness the best of young Kai Havertz. I mean, playing him out wide was rather stupid by Lampard, as he's been shown. Playing him like a false nine, he has that freedom to run forward, and, you know, although we did see the worst of, I want to say a less than capable Havertz in the next game against Real Madrid, at least he's getting those chances. He's getting chances in front of goal. Out wide, he's being wasted because I think if Tuchel can really harness his poaching abilities, you know, because he was winning headers that he shouldn't have, and, you know, latching onto chances, I think he could be a really good, you know, poacher for us.
Which you need when you've got, you know, Werner.
Yeah, Werner, I don't know. He does turn up in the big games, to be fair.
Yeah, I like Werner, but he just misses a big chance every single game.
I know.
I like him. I like his runs. I like, you know, the chances he fashions for himself. I like, you know, I like the way he plays. I just don't like his finishing. And I guess that's why he was successful at Leipzig, was because he had someone to play off of. He wasn't the lone striker. He had Poulsen, who was, you know, the big man who could, you know, get onto the flick-ons and stuff like that.
But even in one-on-ones, he can't finish. I just think of that one. Oh, I guess we'll talk about it later, actually. But...
I mean, I don't know. I like Werner. I think he's a very good player, but he's not been great this season, I will say. He's shown flashes of what he was at Leipzig, but definitely not the same player. But, I mean, just on this game, I mean, that's basically Fulham down now. I think, you know, they sort of threw caution to the wind, playing almost a 4-4-2, really. You know, it was the last roll of the dice from Parker, who, you know, had been playing three at the back most of the season. Hasn't really worked, and yeah, down basically. And yeah, I mean, it's got to be seen as a disappointing season, really, for Fulham. I think that, you know, despite bringing in all these loan signings, despite having, you know, oh, Scott Parker is a exciting young coach, You know, it's been a disappointing season for them. You know, even when they've picked up form, you know, Fulham have never really been close to clawing themselves out of it, really. Like, and I mean, you know, as it stands at the moment, they're 9 points off Newcastle and Burnley. Like, 5 wins all season. I feel like the narrative is sort of that, oh, Fulham, they were brave, they were fighting, you know, they've been unlucky, but they played really good football and they were so close to surviving. They weren't. They've just not been close to surviving at any point, really, this season.
I'm just glad they're down. I don't like Fulham. It does shock me that Parker's the favourite for the Spurs job.
Well, it shouldn't be surprising, really. I mean, you know, he seems like a typical yes man. You know, young manager, looks good in a suit, plays progressive football. It ticks all the boxes. You know, even if he isn't that good.
We're seeing a former player in line to take charge of a former club.
Yeah, and it's not like he has the pedigree to do that. You know, it's not like, But it's not like, you know, he was a manager who's been really successful elsewhere and then he's gone and taken over. You know, he's got relegated twice with Fulham and he only just scraped promotion with the best team in the league.
The first time he took over?
You what?
Wasn't he already relegated by the time he took over Fulham?
I don't think so. I mean, don't get me wrong, he only had like a couple of months or something. I mean, it probably would be harsh to say he got relegated. But, I mean, technically they weren't relegated by the time he took over. So, I mean, he did technically get them relegated. But, you know, last season, like I said earlier, he only just scraped through with the best team in the league. And this season, he's gone down with 5 wins all season, which, you know, is the same as Sheffield United, who's been god-awful, according to everyone, so...
Yeah. There have been a few stand-up players, Sambo Anguissa being one of them, at times.
I think the problem is, a lot of the standout players are going back to their parent clubs this season, and I think next season, you'll sort of see back to the Fulham of last season, you know, relying on Tom Kearney, Joe Bryan, you know, just people like that. Like, you know, they have the championship core still there. They just haven't played. But, you know, they'll use those players. They may just scrape promotion. And then next season, they'll bring in a load of loan signings and go down and the cycle will repeat. It's just so boring.
Well, I mean, some of the signs they've made have been dreadful. I mean, there's a certain man to blame for that.
I don't think you can really describe some of Fulham's transfer dealings this season as all elite. You see what I did there. Yeah, I think, you know, like, Kongolo's been very unlucky with injuries. I mean, you know, I thought he was a decent player for Huddersfield, but he's basically been ruled out for the entire season. Loftus-Cheek, he hasn't impressed me. I'm sure you'll have watched him quite a bit with him being on loan from Chelsea, but he really hasn't stood out to me at all.
There's a few positives. I mean, he's someone that Chelsea needs in someone who's going to drive from midfield and help the wingers. But with that being said, he doesn't pop up with the goals for Fulham.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the best players for Fulham are loanees, like you said, and they'll be going back to their parent clubs. So they need to actually spend money. Do you think they'd be able to sign someone like Luckman from Leipzig?
If they'd have stayed up, potentially, but I can't see it with them going out of championship. I mean, as far as I'm aware, the only loan move that, you know, I could be wrong here, but from what I found, the only loan move that has an option to buy is Mario Lemina. But, you know, you've got to be thinking that, you know, if another Premier League club came in for him, you know, he'd be more likely to go there. Or be more likely to want to go there. You know, you think that, you know, the likes of Luckman, the likes of, you know, Anderson, the likes of Areola, you know, they're not going to be playing championship football next season. Right?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, Areola's impressed certain people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but would PSG want him back?
You know, maybe not. But, you know, whether he, you know, stays at PSG is a different story to whether he, you know, goes to Fulham. Like,
do you think he's... Okay, I'll rephrase the question. Will he be in the Premier League next season?
I don't know. I think he's good enough to be. But, you know, it all depends because, you know, you could get a foreign club coming in for him. Like, you know. I have no idea who's interested in him. But he'll definitely be in one of the top five leagues. I'll say that. If that's enough, if that's not too fence city of an answer for you.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you just look at, you know, players like, they brought in Tete permanently. Oh shit, what the fuck was that? But they brought in Tete permanently. I think he's, you know, more than good enough to play in the championship for them. I think that Lemina, Harrison Reed, I think, you know, if Lemina does go back, you know, Tosin, I think, you know, the permanent signings, even Kongolo, if he manages to get fit, I think the permanent signings they made are more than good enough to play for him next season. But, you know, some of the best players from this season won't be there.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I think, you know, you can really benefit from loan signings. You know, if you bring in one or two players on loan, you know, you can't afford to bring them in permanently, but, you know, you have an option there, they can be really useful. But having six or seven, like, it's just stupid, in my opinion. It's a stupid way to run a club.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they were in the midst of COVID.
Yeah, but this isn't a new thing. I mean, look at two seasons ago. Look what Fulham were doing. They were doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
This is just their strategy. You know, they get promoted and then they sign a good 9 or 10 players. You know, most of them on loan, and then wonder why they can't gel.
Yeah, they don't seem to have the foresight beyond the current season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, the gap that this Fulham team had between the end of the playoff final and the start of the Premier League season. They had 5 weeks. Do you really think that a team that has 5 weeks of preparation, do you really think you can afford to bring in seven new players and that they'll all, you know, settle straight in? No, of course they won't. You need to keep the majority of that core together and, you know, add a bit of quality here and there rather than just revamp the whole team. I feel like that's just common sense. I don't feel like this has to be said, but obviously it does because Fulham don't listen to it.
They're a typical yo-yo team, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as long as this is the way that they do business, I feel like it'll stay that way.
I mean, that's fine by me.
I'm sure you'll be happy with that. But, yeah, I mean, there's not really too much to add on the game, personally. We'll get into Chelsea a little bit more later on. But, you know, I'm going to move on to Everton and Aston Villa. This was a really good game. I covered it for Radio Techers. But, yeah, it was a brilliant game. This end-to-end stuff. A brilliant goal from El Ghazi as well. Yeah, two teams who really aren't fighting for anything at this point in this season. Maybe Everton are fighting for Europe, but, you know, maybe not now after this loss. But, yeah, it was a really good game, at least from a neutral perspective anyway.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the standout player for me was Pickford.
Yeah, yeah, he made some brilliant saves to Pickford.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Everton fans have been wanting for years. You know, a capable goalkeeper. I mean, this season he's sort of been... He had an injury. And then the last season and the season before, he just had the odd mad mistake in him. But it seems this is his best season to date, obviously.
Definitely since the Sunderland season, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, he was far and away Sunderland's best player when they got relegated. You know, there was a reason that Everton wanted to pick him up. Yeah. But yeah, I think that, you know, the thing is with Pickford is he always has that mistake in him. And as a goalkeeper, you can't afford that. Like, literally any other position, you can afford to have a mistake in you. But as a goalkeeper, you can't afford that. But with that being said, when he's on form, he is a really good goalkeeper, as was proven in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been, if it wasn't for Pickford, it should have been a bit of a one-sided affair.
Really,
I don't think 2-1 really reflects the game.
No, I don't think so either. I think it was definitely a, I don't want to say a domination, because both teams had chances, but, you know, it would have been harsh if Villa did not win this game. I think that, you know, they could have easily won by 3 or 4 by half time. So,
Absolutely. I mean, they did get what would later be, you know, it was equaliser by Calhoun. Do you think he stays at Everton beyond this season?
Yeah, I think so, personally. I think, you know, you've got to look at the teams. Where would be a step up for him? Because he's not going to make a sideways step. He's not going to make a downward step. So where's going to be a step up for him? You know, you look to the big six. Well, Arsenal's not. Kane will likely stay at Spurs, so he's not going to go to Spurs. He's not going to go to Man City. He's probably not going to go to Chelsea. If Cavani stays...
I think Man City need a striker.
Yeah, Man City do need a striker, but, you know, I can't see them going for Calvert-Lewin. I don't feel like he fits that sort of Man City style at all, really. You know, the last thing that Pep Guardiola encourages is crosses into the box.
But sometimes they need that. There are games where I watch them and they need to mix it up.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I 100% agree with you. One of the most frustrating things is when, you know, you've got players in the box, you've got, you know, the ball out wide, and you just think cross it in, but they pass it through. And I mean, to be fair, they are top of the league by a margin. But, you know, like you said, I don't think they could do with that, but I don't think that's what Pep wants. So I can't see him going there.
And I think Everton would command quite a fee.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to think, you know, they'll be wanting at least, you know, around about 70, 80 million, you know. And, you know, I'm not being funny, he's worth what people are going to pay for him. But I wouldn't want to pay that sort of money for Calvert-Lewin.
But, City were happy to spend near that for a newly relegated defender.
Mm.
So they're more than happy to splash cash, but I think they have to, with, you know, a severe lack of a 20-goal season striker, and with Aguero leaving on a free. I mean, Jesus is obviously not the man. I think he's, you said this more, a while now, he's better out wide.
Mm.
So maybe they need to look at two strikers.
Mm.
Calvert-Lewin's definitely an option, a different option for them to... Even just coming off the bench, I think he'd do a big...
Mm. Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong, I agree with you. But I just don't think that's what they're looking for in the transfer window. And, you know, you've got to think that with Pep, you know, this season, he's played a lot of games without a striker. And you've got to think, is that Pep perhaps preparing for life after Aguero? You know, where we could see a situation where there are literally no strikers at that club.
Yeah, sometimes he plays De Bruyne up top.
Mm. Well, we've seen quite a few different players makeshift players in number nine. We've seen De Bruyne sort of filling that false nine role. We've seen Foden do that. We've seen Sterling do that. We've even seen Ferran Torres do that.
I think in the group stage he did pretty well there.
Mm. Yeah.
Out and out, I don't think.
Mm. Oh, no. Well, none of them were. And I think that, you know, with Pep playing that quite often this season, I think, you know, is he going to go in for a striker in the summer? I know it seems mad to say no when, you know, they're losing, you know, I think he's City's all-time top scorer. I could be wrong about that.
He has to be.
Yeah. But, you know, when they're losing their all-time record goal scorer and they're not going to replace him, that seems mad. But it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if that were to happen.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it would open the door for more drop points because there are games, even with a striker, you've wanted more from City. They deserve to have more goals.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of cases where, you know, they've missed having that sort of, you know, that anchor, that, just having that body up front, like, you know, someone who, you know, they can play off of, you know, they've missed having that.
I think City are going to spend. So if you don't think they're going to get a striker, who are they going to get?
You see, I don't know. I don't really know, apart from a striker, really, how you would improve that team. I think maybe they could go in for a left back, but I think between, you know, Cancelo being able to play that, Zinchenko being able to play there, and Mendy does all right, and Ake can play there, I think maybe they're not going to look for that. Maybe, you know, they'll look for another defensive midfielder, but Fernandinho, you know, it seems like we've been talking about a Fernandinho replacement for years now. I don't know. I genuinely don't know, because they are far and away the best team in Europe. So any sort of improvement...
We don't know that yet.
Well, you know, just because they lose one game, does that mean that they're not the best team in Europe? Like...
Yeah.
Well, no, it doesn't.
You're champions of Europe if you win Champions League.
Yeah, you're champions of Europe. It doesn't mean you're the best team in Europe.
Well, then what the hell does champion mean?
It means that, you know, you won a knockout tournament.
Yeah, and we beat the supposed best team in Europe. So we're the best team in Europe.
Yeah, but it's a knockout tournament, isn't it?
And we could do it this weekend.
You know.
What if we beat them this weekend and we beat them in the final? What would you say then?
Well, I mean, I'd say you're still like 18 points behind them in the league or something like that. Like, that's what I point to as a counter argument. Because, you know, cup competitions and one-off games, you know, they can go either way. But, you know, the old saying, the league table never lies.
We've only had Mr. Tuchel 101 days.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, like, but, so, you know.
I'm fine and uphill battle. I do agree with you. Yeah, I mean, did they get Haaland? I think a player like that, that Pep would look for a striker. The fee is commands a lot.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that, you know, what's been said that, you know, that Dortmund don't want him to leave, that he won't be leaving. I mean, we know how stubborn Dortmund can be when it comes to negotiations, as we saw with Sancho last season. Plus the fact that he has...
Man United pissing him off.
Well, yeah, but still, like, it shows Dortmund's resolve to, you know, get what they want for a player. I mean, they turned down like £90 million or something for Sancho, which
they
isn't...
They want 130. And
exactly. So
105. No, yeah. 130.
No, I can understand that, but 105 isn't an insignificant offer. You know, to turn that down, you've got to have a lot of balls.
He said we want 130. It's like when Liverpool went, oh, we want more than 40 million for Suarez. So, you know, Arsenal go and bid 40 million and a pound.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know... Like, it's, I don't know, I'm just saying that, you know, to turn down, you know, big offers like that, it shows Dortmund can be stubborn, you know, and, you know, they can dictate their own prices. And, you know, when you consider the release clause that apparently comes into effect, not this summer, but next summer, you know, you've got to think, you know, our club's going to be thinking, well, why do I want to spend £180 million this season when I can spend £80 million next season on him.
Yeah, but I mean, the agent and, you know, the Haaland's father wants £70 million. Start negotiating.
Yeah, but they're not just going to not want that if they start this season, are they?
Are City desperate to get a striker?
My answer would be no. I mean, you know, that's from their perspective. I mean, I've no idea from behind the scenes, but it seems like they're preparing for a life where they don't have a striker.
I don't know, like... I guess, you know, we won't know until Christmas whether that sort of works or not.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, they have been far and away the best team in the league this season, and a lot of that has been without Aguero. So, you know, well, it's yet to be seen how, you know, whether it'll work out or not for him. But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens with them next season. I mean, we've got still quite a few games to get through this now. So, I mean, we'll speed through these next couple. Arsenal managing to beat Newcastle 2-0. Hold your thoughts on Arsenal as a general, but just give us your thoughts solely on this game, Harry.
Expected win against Newcastle. I mean, yeah, that's as black and white as it can be without getting into their next game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the trouble with recording these games, you know, when you've got the weekend games and then the midweek games after that. Sometimes there's a lot of stuff you want to say about a club, but you can't say it before it comes up. Yeah, I mean, solely just focusing on this game. I mean, you know, again, it was a pretty boring game. Arsenal dominated most of it, and they won. You know, simple as, really. I mean, we'll move on quickly to Spurs and Sheffield United. And Gareth Bale managing to get a hat trick. You know, he's really been hot and cold, Bale, this season. But when he's been on form, he's really been class.
Yeah, there's no disputing that. I know that Real want to sell. It's just whether Spurs are willing to pay an astronomical fee plus the full wage that he's on.
Yeah. Well, I think if he's, you know, wherever he goes, I think he will have to take a wage cut. I mean, you know, think about the astronomical wage that he's on. I mean, you know, the disrespect that Real Madrid have shown Bale. I mean, he scored an overhead kick in the Champions League final that won him the game. And, you know, they're calling Hazard another Bale, which, you know, no disrespect to Hazard, but that's so disrespectful to Bale. Like, you know. No, but I mean, just based on their Real Madrid careers is what I'm saying. I'm not comparing them as players.
Is this because of the after effects of the semi-final?
Yeah, have you seen that video of that Spanish TV show? Yeah. I mean, honestly.
It's like they want to be a millionaire.
I know. It's just like the dramatic pauses and the sighs, like, you know. I mean, they deserve everything bad that happens to them, Real Madrid fans, because they are just like, you know.
I mean,
people moan about Man United fans and like Liverpool fans, but they're nowhere near that bad. Like, the arrogance that they have, it's so infuriating.
I just remember when Hazard had just joined, and they were doing the ceremony where they.
Yes,
They were announcing Mbappé.
Yeah.
It's like, you've just got this new player.
Yeah, you've just signed one of the best players in the Premier League for the past 10 years for £150 million, and you're chanting Mbappe. Like, you know, like, do they not realise how delusional they are? Like,
they're spoiled brats as well.
Of course they are, yeah.
It's never enough.
You know, if they signed Mbappe, they'd be chanting for Haaland. Like, you know, it's just, that's just the way Real Madrid fans are. They're all selfish, self-entitled twats. You know, there's no other way to put it. I bet most of them probably wanted the Super League. But, you know, yeah, I mean, just, yeah, it's, they're horrible. They're an horrible lot. But, yeah, Bale was good in this game. Yeah, Sheffield United is going down with a whimper, pretty much. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they perform in the Championship. But, yeah, it's, you know, that's, you know, they've just been poor this season. Like, you know, I know it's brilliant analysis saying a team with 17 points all season has been poor, but, you know, there's not really too much to say without going over old ground, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's nothing really to add that we haven't already said.
So, I mean, we're going to cover the Black Country Derby then. You know, a game what I was saying before on last week's show that, you know, Wolves were in serious danger of losing. They didn't lose this game, but they came damn near close to. I think they probably should have lost this game, in all honesty. You know, Fabio Silva getting a goal just before half time. But in that second half, you know, I think it was, you know, it was just domination from West Brom. They couldn't, you know, Wolves couldn't get out of their own half. You know, Diagne managing to get a goal just after the hour mark, and it probably should have been more. You know, Nuno's been rotating. He tried Otazawa, he tried Vitinha, he tried Silva. But again, the players just didn't perform. And, you know, West Brom, you know, have managed to go this season without losing to Wolves. You know, even if they are going down, I'm sure that's at least something that they can take a little bit of solace in.
Yeah, I guess. I just have this feeling that before it's official, Steve Bruce will leave West Brom, so he retains that title.
Do you mean Sam Allardyce?
Sam Allardyce, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never been relegated.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to have to do it quick because he's got one game, essentially. I mean, yeah, whether he does or he doesn't, I mean... sorry, go on.
He'll resign during the game.
Yeah, half-time, he just doesn't come back out. But yeah, I mean, whether he does or he doesn't, I mean, I can't see him being at the dugouts next season, I'll be completely honest with you.
I mean... it all went wrong when they sacked Village. They sealed their fate at that point.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, to be honest with you, I think they've looked better under Allardyce than they did under Village. I think, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, if Allardyce had been given a full season, because he was given long enough. He came in November. But, you know, I think, you know, Allardyce has, you know, I'm not going to say he's done a good job because he's taken them down, but, you know, I think at times he has really got this West Brom team playing. But it's just a case of next season, you know, you're going to have to bring someone new in, and Bilic would have been far better suited to bring that West Brom team back up than whoever they bring in, who won't know the players, won't know the staff, you know, they won't know the best style of play to get, you know, out of them players and stuff like that. So, you know, it really was short-term thinking.
Well, you don't think they'll stick with Bruce?
No, I can't see Allardyce being there, no.
Where am I getting Bruce from? Jesus.
You've clearly got Steve Bruce on your mind.
Yeah, summary then.
Why, do you think he will be there come next season?
No. I think he'll leave rather than it'll be a sacking.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even necessarily think it's that. I just think it's, you know, I can't see Sam Allardyce wanting to do, you know, Wednesday night kickoffs every week. Like, you know, like he's not Neil Warnock. He's in it really for the money. It's Sam Allardyce. He doesn't really like football that much. I think he's admitted so himself. So, you know, like, I can't see him at his age wanting to be doing midweek games every week.
He said himself he doesn't like football.
I swear he had an interview where he said he didn't like football that much. Like,
but he played it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, players have said, you know, current players, I swear, have said stuff like similar stuff. I think it was, I can't remember, it was one of the Arsenal players, it might have been Bellerin, who said he hates watching football. Yeah. So.
I can understand hating watching football.
He's always hated watching football. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a job to him. You know, you don't go home from work and then start watching the job, do you?
Yeah, but, you know, when you're a kid, like, you know, surely you have a little bit of passion. You know what I mean?
The sort of kid that was out, rather would go out there kicking a ball about.
I do
understand that. I thought you meant he just didn't like football in general.
Oh, right. Well, I'm sure he likes the money he's made out of football, at the very least. But, you know, like... yeah, I mean, I can't see Big Sam staying with him, to be honest with you. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see who they do bring in. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you've missed the big talking point of Sunday.
Why, what was the big talking point of Sunday? I think I must have forgotten.
Well, what game was set to be played?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, this was after the Black Country, wasn't it? The Manchester-Liverpool game was set to play. And it just didn't because of protests. I think that, good on them, to be honest with you. Apart from, obviously, the idiots that took it too far. Obviously, they're, twats and all that. But, good on the majority of fans who, are trying to make their voices heard. Because, what else can they do? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'm on the opposite end of you.
Then. Right, go on.
Well, I don't think you need to be yobs, basically. I don't think you need to. I think the best way to hurt a businessman is to hurt their business.
Mm.
Not so, do not attend games.
Well, that's, they've been doing a good job of that this season.
No, well, I mean, May 17th, final game of the season, fans are now back. Do not go. Do not give them a penny of your money. Do not buy merch. Instead, you outside the game, you protest.
Yeah, but that...
Let the players know, let the manager know, let them pass on the message.
Yeah, but that does nothing. Like, how many fan protests have we seen that's done nothing? Like, this is...
Because there are people who actually go to the games and still give their money to them. I mean, this needs to be a coordinated effort to make sure that no ticket is bought.
Yeah, but do you really think that's possible with a club like Man United?
No, so I'd, no, it's not, but...
Exactly, so they've got to do something, like, And this has really got such bad publicity onto the Glazers that they're not going to want. Like, I don't know if you saw the interview, well, interview in quotation marks, where Glazer was just walking away from all the questions, not answering anything. He's clearly fed up, and this is a way to try and force them out because, if they'd have just done, like what Spurs fans did, Levy's not going anywhere anytime soon, so.
Exactly. He has taken $2 billion off that club. He's more than happy to make $3 billion, $4 billion. He will stay there as long as those stupid United fans keep buying tickets, keep buying shirts, keep buying mugs, keep buying hot dogs, keep going to Old Trafford. He will stay there.
Well, yeah, because it's hard for, if you're a Man United fan who's like 50, 60 years old and you've been supporting that club all your life, it's going to be hard to just, bin it off in a protest. Like, and especially when, it's probably not going to make a difference because they'll just have someone else to fill in your place. It's going to be hard.
I know. So how do you get the Glazers out?
By doing something like this. By making such noise that they can't not listen.
They've done that.
But not to this extent they haven't. And nothing up to this point has worked.
What's happened? Nothing.
Well, nothing at the moment.
The game's getting rearranged as we speak. They're still going to get the TV money. They're still going to get the Premier League money. They're going to rip it out of the club. They're going to sell some players. They'll probably just make... The club will probably end up selling players and not buying them because the Glazers are just going to make a mockery of it again.
Mm.
I think it's going to be a civil war, essentially.
Mm.
The retaliation from the Glazers is going to be rip more money out of the club. And there are going to be United fans who still turn up every game week and filling up those seats.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I mean. You're never going to be able to coordinate a protest when, there's probably 2 million Man United fans in the country. Like, probably more.
It's like WWE when people go, oh yeah, don't watch.
That don't do well. Do you think that, they're going to care about losing, 10,000 people on Twitter? Like,
yeah. It needs to be a coordinated effort, and unfortunately when it gets to the hundreds of thousands...
Exactly, it's impossible to do.
Yeah. So I don't know how you get someone. It's easy when it's a club like Blackpool against the Oystons, because play, because fans, there's less of them, and it's more of a family club. It's more the fans are based in Blackpool. It's easier to do things under the owners' noses. Whereas Man United are global. There's people flying all over the place constantly to see them even play Stoke on, in a Carabao Cup game. Like, so I genuinely don't have an answer. I know from a moral standpoint, you don't go and fucking scar policemen.
Oh, yeah, no. Do not get me wrong. I am not condoning that in any way, shape or form. You know, that is, you know, that's just, that's fucked. Like, you know, I'm not defending that at all. You know, don't. I really need to make it clear that I'm not defending that.
I mean, I don't think many people are taking into account the events that led up to them trespassing. I'd imagine, you know, a steward is not going to stand up to thousands of fans. So he probably felt his life, if he did that, his life was at threat. So he had to open the gate.
Mm.
And then he had to get the police involved, and now it's become a whole police matter.
Mm.
I think once you get those people locked up, the maniacs, how do you coordinate a protest after that? Because United are going to have security on hand now every game.
Mm. Well, apparently the stewards were letting them in. That's how they got in.
Oh, they let them in.
Yeah.
They didn't hide. They didn't have a lock gate, and then they were like, no one go by.
No, they let them in.
Okay. Because in my head, I had it that, I don't know, it's like stewards felt threatened. They can't have fans.
No, the stewards were, you know, they were letting them in. They were all right with it.
Okay, so I guess they just have to have police at the game.
Well, and there probably was police there. I mean, it's Man United, Liverpool. There probably were some police presence there.
Yeah, but they're going to have to maximise it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no.
And then that's going to have an impact on the Manchester general area.
Mm.
So you're fucking over, you know, your city. I mean,
I
genuinely do not have an answer, but
I just respect the fact that they're doing summer, because, like, you know, just the normal protests, they don't work, and they're proven to not work. So, you know, I respect the fact that they're doing summer, because you can't coordinate a protest where everyone boycotts Man United. You know, even if they manage to get everyone in England to do that, there's probably more Man United fans in China than there is, like, clubs, than there is fans of clubs in half of the Premier League teams. Like, and they're not going to care about the Glazers, are they? So,
no.
So, you know, no matter what they do, they're going to have customers. You know, and I use that word customers because that's what the Glazers see them as.
Yes.
But, you know, like, they're always going to have customers. So, you know, that they're, you know, they can't coordinate that sort of protest. They're going to have to do something different.
Yeah, but on the flip end of the coin, how much of the Glazers put into that club? I mean, obviously they're taking a lot out of it, but they've put a lot of money transfer-wise. I mean, they almost always get the players they want, minus Sancho.
Yeah, but it's,
it's
not, it's not just about, you know, transfer spendings. Like, it's a lot bigger than that.
I know. I don't know how you get rid of a conglomerate like that.
Mm. No, I don't either. But I just respect them for trying. You know what I mean? Because they've got to do summer.
But I just don't see it working.
Yeah, it might not work.
Do nothing, and obviously, you don't want to go out like that.
Mm.
I think when it comes to billionaires versus working class people, the billionaires always win.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when the billionaire will never face the repercussions for this. You know,
exactly.
It's not like he lives in Manchester. Like, you know.
Oh,
I mean, we've seen Woodward's house get, like, petrol bombed and stuff. Like, which obviously I don't agree with. You know, but I feel like I should have to say that. But, you know, it shows that, you know, there will be fans who will, you know, do stuff like that, who will, you know, make them face, you know, repercussions, even if they are unfair repercussions. But he lives in America. You know, that's not going to happen to him in Los Angeles or wherever he lives. Like,
the only US coverage I saw was James Corden.
Yeah. Well, that was for Super League, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, yeah. I guess that was an attack towards the Glazers.
Mm.
More so the, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know that it's a bad idea when even James Corden disagrees with it and you agree with James Corden, you know. Like, one of the biggest up-his-own-ass knobs on TV. Like, when you're even agreeing with James Corden, that shows how bad of an idea it is.
I don't get why people don't like James Corden, but that's because I don't really watch much of James Corden. Like, I like to see Gavin Stacey.
He's just up his own ass. Like, have you seen the Carpool Karaoke he did with Paul McCartney?
No.
Like, you know, he's just like, you know, making jokes, like singing badly over him, and it's just like, you know, no one cares about you. We want to listen to Paul McCartney. Like,
he's a knob.
Yeah, but you know, I want to listen to Paul McCartney. I don't want to listen to James Corden singing Paul McCartney songs.
We should do an episode about the assassination of John Lennon.
Mm. Oh, was it Paul? Was it?
Oh yeah, that was that's also a conspiracy. Is this a new Paul McCartney?
Yeah, because if you play like Stairway to Heaven backwards or something, it says Paul is dead.
I love when they go, oh yeah, if you play this backwards, you'll hear like a passage to Satan.
Yeah.
Like, really? I mean, I kind of hear it, but I don't think that's the intention. It's just I don't know what the term is, but when,
yeah, because the amount of effort to make something that sounds, you know, like Satan, like stuff like that backwards, but is also listenable forwards. Like, yes. The amount of effort that would take, like.
And also,
isn't it that on the Abbey Road cover, Paul's in all white, so they're saying that's because he's gone to heaven and he's not wearing any shoes because there's no shoes in the afterlife and stuff like that. Like,
the fuck, who made that wrong?
I know.
To be fair, that reminds me of Family Guy where God tells Peter that everyone has to die with towels because there's a shortage. I love Family Guy.
I know you do. But yeah, it was just, you know, but I respect the fact that they did something. You know, that's, you know, all I'll say. And obviously, apart from those idiots, you know. But I feel like that needs to be said. If we talk about some actual football that happened, though. Yeah, Burnley lost 2-1 to West Ham. I mean, it could have been by more, really. I think that, you know, we were just beaten by the better team. There was not really that much to it. I'm not annoyed about the way we played. I think, you know, some of the defending for the two goals was a bit suspect, especially by one Matthew Lawton. But, you know, I'm not overly annoyed. You know, we were just beaten by the better team. There's not really that much to it.
Yeah. I thought me watching it might have... Well, you did go off to a good start.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... we did create a fair few chances. You know, we weren't bad by any means. You know, it was just the fact that, you know, when you've got Benrahma, who's on form, and you've got Lingard, who's on form, and you've got Fornals playing well, you've got Koufal playing well, you've got Antonio playing well, you know, Diop and Dawson playing well at the back, all that just came together, and you know, they were just a better team. Like,
Antonio should have taken the match ball.
Yeah, it, probably.
He was an incredible poacher. I don't know whether this is breaking news or I don't know whether it's like false or not, but apparently 9 of the 12 ESL teams will face 5% of their revenue from the European competitions withheld for at least a season.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Like, that is just not a punishment, is it? 5% of the revenue will be withheld for one season. That is a joke. And I knew it was going to be somewhat shite like that in terms of a punishment. But, you know, you got to think that's what? 100 million, say a team gets 100 million from European revenue. Okay, so that's 5 million that's being withheld for a season. Next season, they'd get that 5 million anyway. But they're still getting the hundreds of millions from their own domestic competitions, you know, along with the other 95 million for the Europe, from, you know, the European money. Like, that is a joke of a punishment.
UEFA and FIFA need to step up. They need a reformation of their own. The whole game governing bodies need reformation to stop this corruptness. Bribery, I'd assume. Or are we going to wait until Infantino's out of office like we did with Blatter, and it all comes out of the woodwork?
Well, it'll just be a cycle, won't it?
When it's just like, well, it didn't matter anyway.
Exactly. It'll just be a cycle, you know. Someone will get outed, so they'll be disposed as president, and then they'll bring in someone new, and then they'll get outed for corruption, and, you know, the cycle just continues because the whole system is corrupt, right?
Yeah, the game's broke, but...
Yeah. But, you know, I mean... Yeah. It's not what we can do except actually enjoy football for what it is and not, you know, a load of billionaires in suits. So, you know. But, you know. Yeah, it's just a joke of punishment, but what else did you expect, really?
I wouldn't even use the term punishment.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's like, you know. Well, it's not even that. It's like, you know, yeah, it's like, you know, like a kid throws a tantrum in a shop because he can't get, you know, the toy that he wanted. So the parents just buy him basically the same toy. Like, you know.
He wants a Lego Death Star set, but he gets the Imperial Destroyer instead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's... Yeah, you know, it's just nothing, like.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, what else did you expect? Yeah, we're moving to some European games now. I mean, yeah, it's just what a performance this was for Man City, both defensively and going forward. What a performance this was for Man City.
Yeah, I think with the added fact that PSG were pretty poor.
And they were absolutely rattled by Man City as well. I think this is something that we saw in both the City-PSG game and the Real Madrid-Chelsea game, was the British clubs being absolute shithouses and just absolutely rattling the other two. Teams.
You called it Brexit ball, but the amount of chances that the English teams created would—I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, I was being a little bit facetious there. I mean, I don't even know what Brexit ball's supposed to be, but you know, it's just because they're English. I mean, that wouldn't make any sense really, because you know, you think back. you know, 4-4-2 was invented by the Dutch. The way we played football, we played it with one centre-half, two wing-backs, two midfielders, three attacking sort of like wide players and two strikers. You know, traditionally, you know, English football was always far more attacking and fluid and free-flowing than foreign football. You know, so I don't see how Brexit ball is the bad football, you know, but...
Because...
That's my rant over.
It has Brexit in it, and that's funny.
Exactly, yeah. All right. But, yeah, I mean, you know, both City and Chelsea, we'll get on to, you know, absolutely rattled the other opponents, which led to, in this game, you know, a huge number of, you know, bad tackles being committed by PSG. And I'm surprised they only had one man sent off, to be completely honest with you.
Agreed. I think, what's his face? I think it was Kimpembe, I think, should have been sent off.
Mm.
He made a vicious tackle.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. Yeah, probably should have been.
I mean, was it Di Maria that got...
Di Maria got a red card, yeah. For a stamp, which was easily a stamp.
Am I looking at, I'm looking at the first leg? What an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Idrissa Gueye got sent off in the first leg, but Di Maria got sent off in the second leg.
Yeah, and both times it was the implosion of PSG, and I'm surprised more punishment didn't come.
Hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be that PSG need to handle how to lose better, because I'm pretty sure I said this last time, there's no sense of unity when they go behind. There's no regrouping and trying to, you know, turn it around. It's just we've lost the game. Let's try and hurt our opponents now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you know, and you wouldn't have thought out of the two teams that PSG were the one in the Champions League final last season, and that Man City were the one who were never in a Champions League final. You know, Man City just looked like they had so much more experience in terms of, you know, dealing with the pressure and, you know, being in, you know, high pressure situations, whereas PSG just looks like, you know, the petulant children that, you know, weren't used to not getting their own way. You know, they weren't used to this sort of high pressure situation, but they were in a Champions League final last season, so
yeah. I mean, that would mark their 10th competitive red card this season.
Yeah, which, you know, is... That's not good, that.
No. They've still got another 4 games to play as well. So, that... I mean, they could hit records for the most red cards in a single season.
Mm.
I mean, someone's got to find the players, surely. They're just lack of
sportsmanship
and discipline.
Hmm. Yeah, you'd assume so. I mean, you know, I'm guessing there's some sort of code of conduct in place. There is in most clubs, so I'm guessing there is for PSG. But, you know, they'll definitely be making quite a bit of money from it if there is. Yeah. Yeah, they've definitely been...
I don't get... PSG looked awful when it's... It's incredible when they lose... Someone like Mbappe, they're a complete shell of themselves.
Mm. Well, I mean, even if they had Mbappe, do you really think that this PSG side would have been that much better?
They may have got a consolation goal, but defensively they were all over the place. City were just the better team in the day. They're the better team in comparison, man for man, I'd say as well.
Mm.
I mean, there were a couple of occasions where Neymar showed glimpses of himself.
Mm.
But I think the free kick at the end where he could have got, you know, his name in the lineup for a little bit, kind of summed it up, he just skied it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the Mahrez show. He really showed up, Neymar. Mm. How a true showman.
Mm. Yeah, I think Mahrez, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated players in the league. I think that he's absolutely tremendous, is Mahrez, and he really showed his quality today. Yeah, he's brilliant, is Mahrez.
Yeah, and I remember seeing a picture of him and Kante. They were at Leicester. They haven't just signed from Ligue 2?
Ligue 2, yeah. Well, I think in 20, I'm not even going to try and guess the year. I'm just making an idiot out of myself. Both of them were playing amateur football, and then they went to Ligue 2, and then they both signed for Leicester, and then Leicester managed to sell them on for over £100 million combined.
Okay, you just skip over the part where they achieved one of the biggest miracles in football,
yeah? Oh, yeah. No. Of course, you know, that's something that should never be glimpsed over.
And they're still performing to a very high standard at their new clubs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll get into Kante for the Chelsea game. But, yeah, it was a brilliant game from both the wide men, Mahrez and Foden. I think Foden's fucking brilliant. But, yeah, you know, it is a really just, you know, nice story. And, I sound like such a wanker saying that. But, you know, it is... really such a great story.
I'll get into Mendy's story when we get into the Chelsea game.
I mean, we'll get onto that in just a second, but I mean, just before we do, I want to gush a little bit over Phil Ford, and he's just brilliant, isn't he? I mean, like, you know, we're saying, you know, oh, you shouldn't be comparing players to other players, you know, because that only adds pressure. But I don't think Phil Foden's listening to this podcast, so it's all right. He just reminds me so much of Gazza. Like, he's so good, is Foden. Like, he's probably the best player I've seen at that age, is Foden. He's just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean... what is he, 20, 21? Like, so much maturity for a young player. And I think people are starting to believe that Pep Guardiola's sentiment, he said, where he could be, well, he undoubtedly said that he's better than Messi.
Yeah, which, you know, I still think that's, you know, a leap, considering... you know, Messi's arguably one of the greatest of all time. You know, like, it's, you know, you can't compare it to Messi. Like, that is just completely unfair. Like, it's just adding unnecessary pressure onto him. Like, but he is fucking good. Like,
yeah. I think Messi is the greatest player of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, even if you don't think he is, he's definitely up there, you know. Like, mm-hmm. So, you know, there's, you know, I always hate it whenever the media crowns someone, like the next someone, when, like, you know, he's the next Messi or the next Ronaldo or whatever, because that usually always ends in tears, that. And I mean, you know, I really hope that doesn't happen to Phil Foden, because he's such a good player. And he doesn't deserve that kind of... I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve that kind of comparison, but, like, you know, he deserves to be talked about in his own right, not saying, oh, well, he could be like Messi, like, you know, because that's just going to put pressure on the kid, isn't it?
People are doing that now with Haaland and Mbappe.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that. I don't agree with saying, oh, he's going to be the next Ronaldo, like...
the next big thing.
Well, no, because there's a difference between saying that and saying, you know, he's going to be like this player. Because saying he's going to be great and saying he's going to be the next so-and-so, like, you know, there's a difference there. Because there's already precedence.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Are we done your little circle jerk over... Foden?
Yeah, I've finished, you know, both metaphorically and physically about Foden. So I'll let you talk about the brilliant Chelsea performance against Real Madrid, because I'm sure, you know, you'll have a, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to crank one out to that, I'm sure.
I already have plenty of time. Right. I'm going to start pessimistic. I think it should have been an absolute slaughtering. I think probably before the second goal went in, we should have been, it should have been a cricket score. I mean, the amount of one-on-ones that we fluffed, they gave, I don't think it was Courtois being a good goalkeeper. It was the sheer lack of...
You really don't want to bring yourself to say Courtois is pretty good, do you?
It's not even that. It's, they should be scoring, regardless of using goal. I mean, 4 one-on-ones, all of which... I mean, they resulted to nothing. I mean, things did start to change when Pulisic came on. It made, once he came on, the reality of that second goal did actually happen. But why didn't he start? He was the man of the match in the last game. He made it happen for us. He made it happen against City early in the season. He'll probably make it happen again this weekend against City. He's, why are you not starting him? I know Havertz has just come off the bridge against Fulham, but Pulisic is the man who turned up in the big games. You can't just have someone, oh yeah, well, he scored two against a, let's say, already relegated side. I mean, Pulisic should have started. That's basically the end of the tangent. I think he, if he was given 2 out of the 4 one-on-ones, he would have put them out away. And I think he would really turn it into a proper slaughter. But, okay, positive me, Kai and Werner. Well, Kai hit the post twice.
Yeah, you've just spent 10 minutes slating the fact that he started Kai Havertz, and now you're going to say, oh, brilliant Kai Havertz. Like...
Well, he did. He hit the post twice. And if they were, if their chances came to Pulisic, he would have put them away. 3 times Havertz missed. Wait, he didn't miss. He hit the post, the woodwork twice. He missed the one-on-one. The one-on-one, I'm pretty sure Pulisic would have put away. However, Havertz was unlucky to have his goal stricken off him because Werner, with the easiest goal he's ever going to score. I don't know where the hell...
Surprised he missed that, to be completely honest with you.
Okay. I mean, he does turn up in the big games. His movement... He did get the opening goal, but that was given offside. His movement is always incredible. His position is great. It's just that last moment. Tuchel needs to perfect that. I don't know whether he gets in his own head or he's second-guessing himself. I don't know what it is. But as a poacher, he doesn't miss that often. I mean, we did see that in the last game where Courtois pulled out that amazing save. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Werner got the opener, and first blood was ultimately important in this game because, that, you know, had Real got a goal, we had to score 2 on the night to go. And if we got the goal, then Real had to turn up. So it was, that was important. But the defence gets a lot of praise because we only really gave away one big chance, and that was Benzema, which was superbly saved by Mendy. And here's a story about Mendy. About 6 years ago, Mendy left Cherbourg, which is like a lower league club in France. And the supposed agent said, oh, we'll get you a job in England. So he left Cherbourg looking for a job in England. This agent never called, never returned any calls, never messaged him, never to be seen again. So Mendy had to go on benefit to basically make a living and basically doing football part-time. Marseille picked him up in the second team. Then Reims picked him up. And then he did good work at Reims. Then he went to Rennes. His debut season at Rennes, Rennes achieved third. They went to the Champions League. and then Chelsea wanted him. So to go from unemployment to a Champions League final, that's quite a story.
Yeah, and he finally got that move to England as well.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that worries me in regards to the final is when we play...
The fact that Man City are a far better team than you.
Well, not only that, but it's this... I don't know what you call it. Starts with ST.
ST? Well, I don't know what you're on about. There's lots of words that start with ST.
Like ritual, like...
It's like a what?
It's like ritual, but... I forgot what it's called.
Ritual?
It's like
a ritual. Like a pre-match sort of like... superstition type of thing.
That's it, superstition, yeah.
Right, yeah. So it doesn't begin with ST.
Yeah, that's Stition does.
Right.
Anyway, 2012 final. It was Drogba's last ever game for Chelsea. He went on to score the winner. Now, when we face City, it will be Aguero's final game for City.
Mm. And there is that famous quote from Aguero saying he will not leave until City win the Champions League.
Okay. I'm just thinking, does that fairy tale moment happen for them?
Yeah, because I mean, I must admit, and you're probably not going to want to hear this, it feels more, just based off of like a gut feeling, it feels more like Man City's year than Chelsea's to win the Champions League. Just based off of like pure feeling from a neutral standpoint.
I mean, I can't disagree with that. I mean, in Europe and England, they're far and away the better side. But I think under Tuchel, we're a new-look side.
Oh, yeah, it all can happen in 90 minutes. Let's not, overlook that.
I don't think a big team is yet to test this Chelsea side. So... That I don't think it's going to be done in 90 minutes.
Mm.
And I don't think it was going to be done in 120 minutes.
Oh, that would be a good penalty shootout. Oh,
I think that fifth penalty is going to go to Mr. Aguero.
I mean, it would be a good story, wouldn't it? I mean, not for you, but for any sort of Man City fan or neutral. It's definitely a good story, that.
But does the nerves get to him? Does he miss it? Because there's a lot of stick going toward Mendy. And that's what you're saying, oh, you're Chelsea and you get a new goalkeeper.
No. Let's not get it twisted. I never said that. I never said that Chelsea should go out and get a new goalkeeper. I'm saying that there's talk of Chelsea perhaps being in the market for a goalkeeper.
Okay, well, he wants to shut that up. Does he stop Aguero in the biggest game of his Man City career, possibly of his entire career, although he has been in Copa America finals? Does he save it? I mean... Our record against Manchester clubs on penalties in finals is not good. Yeah. And I just hope it's not a curse of the Manchester clubs.
Yeah.
When it comes to the European finals. Yeah, right.
Well, it'll definitely be an interesting watch, I'll say that.
Yeah, I'm going to have my arse clenched. Even more so than I was when I was watching the Real game.
Aye, definitely. But yeah, it will definitely be entertaining. Speaking of entertaining, if we talk about Arsenal,
Hello.
God, they were shit, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think, does their big players move on now? There's no Europe next season. There's no silverware.
Well, what I will say is, you know, whether or not the big players move on, they're not getting any new big players. I'll definitely say that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Do you think Thomas Partey joins if this was how they finished last season?
What, with the Atleti top of the league? Definitely not.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, you know, last season, Arsenal were attractive. They looked like they were on the up. They'd just won the FA Cup. You know, they bagged European football and they'd won a trophy. They were attractive to go to. Do you think, like, Aouar is going to want to go from Lyon, who, you know, are fighting for a Champions League place, to Arsenal, who don't have European football next season? Do you think any, you know, top-level player, well, not even top-level player, but do you think any player from a top-level club is going to want to go to Arsenal? You know, a team who might finish bottom half and without European football? You know? And it's all right saying, get Arteta out. And don't get me wrong, you know, I don't think Arteta's experienced enough to handle this job. I think tactically, some of the substitutions he made in this game were baffling. But, you know, it's not like you can, you know, magically bring in Allegri and it'll all be fixed. Like,
I think it comes down to the board, it comes down to the manager, it comes down to the owners not putting enough money in the club. There are certain players who I think are bigger than Arsenal, better than Arsenal.
Willian being one of them, David Luiz being another one.
No, I think players like Aubameyang, Saka.
Mm.
I mean, I think Joe Willock is. I think it's more. It's a lateral move, isn't it, to get a new
one? Oh, come on! I mean, I wouldn't go that far. Jesus Christ!
Well, that's who they're competing with, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I'm joking, but I do think it went up at Newcastle because mm-hmm. he's guaranteed football. He's doing really well now.
Don't get me wrong. If this situation happened 6 or 7 years ago, Saka turns up in a Man City shirt next season.
Well, yeah. I mean, Aubameyang's got to be looking at the prospects for next season. What are the realistic prospects of next season for Arsenal Football Club? There's no Europe. They're no longer in the FA Cup. You know, they went. I don't know how many seasons they won it in a row. Was it twice? Three times?
I think it was three times they won the FA Cup.
Yep.
It might have been like three times in four seasons or something.
Yeah. So that streak's over. Carabao Cup has always seen, you know, if you win that,
I'm sure they'd take it at this point, Arsenal.
Yes, I'm on about Aubameyang.
Right.
Are those the sort of competitions? There's no Europe. There's no, outside of the other top six, the top five, I guess, there's no other elite opponents that he can be showing his worth against. Where, I mean, I don't know if there's any clubs interested. I assume if he makes it public, he doesn't want to be at Arsenal anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've not heard anything, but, you know, like you say, I'm sure he would be able to engineer a move if he didn't want to be there. You know, I mean, I think he has sort of hampered himself a little bit with that contract that he signed last season. I think it was a 3-year deal, was it? So.
Well, I don't think that means much to players. I think.
But it just inflates his price, doesn't it? Like, because he would have been going on a free if he didn't sign that contract. So.
But can Arsenal dictate, oh, we want this and that? No, you're not in Europe. You don't have, like you said, they can't bring in big players anymore. So if there's going to be an exodus of their star players and there's no incoming of new star players, Arsenal have literally got whoever's the unwanted and their academy. And maybe if they're lucky, they might be able to bring in a couple Championship players who might do a job for them, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like we were saying, you know, like I think this is the start of a cycle for Arsenal. I mean, like we were saying, the Championship players, their prices are being inflated, and the bigger clubs are going in for them. Like, you know, say you're Dan Juma. Are you going to sign for Leicester? Are you going to sign for West Ham? Are you going to sign for Arsenal at this point? You know, the only thing that would make sign for Arsenal would be the wages. But, you know...
I think Leicester can certainly... Now they've got Champions League money, I think they can match or even better Arsenal's.
Yeah. I mean, like, if it wasn't for the fact that the Arsenal Academy is, you know, one of the best in England at the moment, you know, it's probably between them and Chelsea, you'd argue. Maybe Man United's up there as well. If it wasn't for the fact that their academy is really, you know, producing top quality players, you know, like Smith Rowe, Saka, you know, Willock, you know, players of that ilk, they'd be fucked. And I think this is the start for Arsenal. I think this is the start of, you know, a period where they're not going to win anything, where they're not going to be competing. You know, to be honest with you, I think that this is probably going to be the new norm for Arsenal at this point.
I think it all goes wrong for them. Temper at the moment. Wenger out. Where the fans were unhappy at constantly having fourth. Now they're going to have to put up a finishing 14th.
Well, I don't even necessarily think it was that. Because, I mean, he was going to leave at some point, wasn't he? Like,
yeah, but...
I mean, you look at how they performed under Emery, and, you know, they got to a Europa League final, they finished fifth, you know, like, it wasn't like it was a disaster. I'm sure Arsenal fans would snap your hand off for a fifth-place finish now.
Yeah. I just think with the players they've got, outside of their defence, maybe the more outfield players, they should be storming the top 10.
Storming the top 10, yeah.
Well, I mean, Aubameyang and Lacazette, on their day, they're I wouldn't put them one of the best strikers, but they're certainly great. Saka, one of the best youth prospects in England. Emil Smith Rowe is growing. You know, we're seeing more and more of him as each game goes.
Mm.
Then on the right, they've got Pepe and Willian.
Mm.
I mean, that's another thing. 72 million for players. That's going to be out the window. Mm. I mean, how can Arsenal justify spending 72 million? And would a player worth 72 million want to go to Arsenal?
Yeah, exactly. Like I was saying, Aouar isn't going to want to go.
Well, Leon's sat in fourth, I believe, at the moment. So that's Europa League.
Mm. Which is a lot better than what Arsenal are in. You know, they're not even going to get to the Conference League. Yeah. You know, you think Odegaard's going to want to sign there permanently? You know?
I don't think they can afford him.
Yeah.
60 million if they've got it.
Mm.
I mean, that's a star player already going. They don't want to sign Sabas. I don't think they would have had a hat and the ring, to be honest.
Mm.
I don't think a player would want to go from Real Madrid to Arsenal now. I think players that are currently out on loan from Arsenal, they probably want to stay at their parent clubs because they're getting game time.
Mm. Not at Arsenal. Their parent clubs.
Oh, yeah, sorry. They're at their new clubs. They're getting game time.
Mm.
Their parent club is a sinking ship. I mean, do we see Arsenal end up like Liverpool where they're sleeping giants for ages again?
Yeah, I can't see them. Because the thing is, how do you break out of this cycle?
New owners who actually give a crap about the club, Daniel Ek.
Yeah, but even, you know, if you bring in new owners, you know, you know, the owners aren't the ones playing. The owners aren't the ones setting up the tactics. Like, you know. No,
he's more than willing to put his fair share of money into it.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You know, you can have as much money as you want. but you're not going to be able to attract the top quality players that you need. That's what we're saying. I don't think Awar's looking at Arsenal and saying, I'm not going to get enough money. He'll be looking at Arsenal and saying, I don't want to play for a club that's finishing 10th.
Yeah, but I think you can get players from Villarreal.
Look, financially, Arsenal are fine. They're spending money, you know.
Yeah, but we were talking about that. They spent 72 million on a player. That was their record. Like, nowadays...
Yeah, but that's the record for a lot of teams.
Standard signing nowadays.
It's not. Let's be honest, it's not. I mean, Chelsea have just made a £72 million signing, and he's their record signing.
Yeah, but we have been making 40 to 50 million. Like, we don't really see that as often at Arsenal.
Well, they brought in Thomas Partey, who's 40 million.
Yeah, but then they go and sign someone like Pablo Mari. And they go and Willian on a free. And they go and loan in Matthew Ryan, the furlough staff. The infrastructure of Arsenal needs a change.
Mm. I
think maybe the whole 11 needs a change. I think it would change because certain players won't want to be there. I think they'll see themselves better off. And I think Nketiah is not a striker that's Premier League quality. I think, you know, David Luiz isn't, you know, top six worthy. I mean, is it even fair to call Arsenal top six anymore?
No, because they're not. They're big six, but they're not top six.
Okay, yeah, big six, okay.
Well, I think just the term big six refers more to, you know, the gulfing, you know, finances and how money's distributed. Because Arsenal will still get, you know, way more money than West Ham this season. On like from broadcasters and they'll get more income.
What about next season?
It depends, really. I mean, if West Ham get Champions League, I think West Ham probably will. But if they get Europa League, I can still see Arsenal getting more money than them in terms of, you know, broadcast.
They went like Liverpool, where they were signing players like Charlie Adam, Jay Spearing.
Yeah, I do think that'll be Arsenal's role for the next few years. You know, because there isn't a fix to this. Because it's just a big cycle. You know, you can't bring in the top players so you perform worse, which means that the big managers don't want to come to you, which means you perform worse, which means that the big players don't want to come. And it's just a big cycle, you know, and it's really hard to break out of that, you know, money or not, owners or not. Because, I mean, say you're like... What's that?
They're not going to end up like Schalke.
No, I don't think they'll end up like Schalke. They're not going to get relegated.
That would be funny.
It would be pretty funny, to be fair. But, you know, like, say you're... I don't know, like... I don't know. Who've Arsenal been linked with, like, manager-wise? Say you're, like, Rafa Benitez, for example. Why would you go to Arsenal?
I know, he's been to Liverpool and Chelsea.
Yeah, but...
They're not on the same... I suppose Liverpool were at one point, but even at Chelsea, he got Europa League with us.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, why would any manager want to go to Arsenal? Like, they're a sinking ship. No manager's going to come in there and improve them. You know, they might have an initial new manager bounce, but that'll be it. They'll be back to finishing 8th and 9th.
Well, the bookies have put Brendan Rodgers as the favourite.
Well, that's just not going to happen. No. Well, who else have they got?
You've mentioned this man, Massimo Allegri. Definitely not.
Seems like he's just linked with every job because he's been unemployed for ages.
You mentioned Benitez. Simeone, he's one of the most expensive managers. He's on the biggest salaries. Patrick Vieira, he was shit at Nice.
Yeah.
Hasenhüttl, I think he does much better than Arsenal, personally. Eddie Howe, I can see that. Paulo Fonseca from Roma, I mean, he's going to lose his job to Mourinho. Gasperini at Atalanta, definitely not. Freddie Ljungberg, I mean, we've seen that nepotism. Sol Campbell, his last job was Southend. That's an outsider's thing. Roberto Martinez from Belgium. Is that doable?
I highly doubt it.
They've put Marco Rose on here, but he's going to Dortmund. They've also put Nagelsmann on there. Maurizio Sarri? No.
Hey, Sarri did good for Chelsea.
Yes, but I imagine he's got a big wage. He likes to have control of the transfer dealings. It doesn't seem that's the case at this current ownership.
Oh, no. It's definitely not.
No. 40-1 Arsene Wenger.
Could you imagine how funny it'd be?
Yeah, and 50-1 Sam Allardyce. Allegri and Rodgers being the two favourites. That's horseshit.
Yeah. It just is like. I mean, the bookies do have names what just get linked with every job. Like,
I'm just going on a different site. They've cited Roy Hodgson. Which, again, isn't realistic. Again, I don't think someone like Bielsa or Dean Smith would move to Arsenal.
I mean, Smith's more likely of the two, but I can't see either of them moving.
I think he's done a fantastic job at there. I think this season's given a fantastic foundation to build off, I think. There's definitely more to come at Villa. Europe League is definitely a realistic prospect next season. And I think he's worth staying at Arsenal. I think they've got more ambitious prospects than Arsenal do. The only reason he'd be going there would be money. We get into the other game. We've really gone off on the tangent.
We have. We'll discuss the Roma-Man United game. I mean, I didn't end up watching this one live. I watched it after the fact. And it was a far more entertaining affair, I will say.
If it wasn't for De Gea, we would have seen the biggest turnaround in UEFA Cup history because he made 10 saves. 10 saves. A team that was 6-2 up could have actually gone out if it wasn't for De Gea pulling off some amazing saves, mixed in with some poor finishing, admittedly, even though that they got three, Roma. Outfield player for United was Cavani. I mean, he was incredible. United need him to re-sign.
Yeah, he's shown his quality, definitely. I think that a lot of people were sceptical about Cavani. I think they sort of, there was a sort of perception that he was past it when he came to United, but, he's definitely proven that wrong. I think that, he's been one of the best players for United this season, definitely. I think, he's an absolute, he's been brilliant for him. I think having that physicality, that presence about him, he's just everything that Martial isn't. And like you say, he's definitely someone that, United need to keep on.
I mean, if that 11 played a better team, than Roma. They were going out. 100%.
Mm.
Cavani made it a narrow defeat. Mixed it with the poor finishing.
Mm.
I mean, there's plenty of issues highlighted in that match that Mourinho has to deal with, but that's a podcast in itself.
Yeah. But I mean, defensively, United were, you know, just, especially terrible. That second half. Once Shaw and Wan-Bissaka came off for Tellez and Williams, they were just awful.
No, I thought their defence was awful. In general, De Gea probably made them look.
Oh yeah, in general it was poor, but I'm just saying in the second half it was even worse than the first half.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, I think that, you know, because I mean there was a lot of talk about De Gea saying, you know, oh, should Man United cash in on De Gea? You know, should they give Dean Henderson more games? You know, is De Gea's time up? He's shown in that game that he's still a top quality goalkeeper on his day.
Mhm. Very much returned to the 2016-17 form in that game.
Mm. Definitely, yeah.
A bit of rarity, unfortunately.
Mm.
On his day, he is top three.
Mm.
I unfortunately, I can't see anyone go past Oblak. I have a massive heart on Oblak.
Yeah. Manuel Neuer's sort of career renaissance has been, you know, really, you know, good to see as well. He's just quality, isn't Neuer. I mean, you know, it's probably between Neuer and Buffon as to, you know, best goalkeeper, at least of our generation. He's still absolutely quality. And then you've got Edison, and then, you know, De Gea on his day is probably as good as all of them.
Yeah.
Mm. But you know, yeah, like you say, I think it was a case of just a bit of complacency from United, really.
Mhm.
You know, I don't think it was a you know. No, I think it was just, you know, a bit of, you know, complacency. Yeah, I don't know how to say it, really. But I mean, yeah. Is there else you're wanting to add on to this game?
No.
No? Right, well, I mean, I think that's pretty much it in terms of the football. So is there out that you're wanting to plug then, Harry?
I'll plug my Twitter at HazardChelsea, at HazardTweets10. Changed it.
And I'll plug mine at Chris_BFC. And you can follow the podcast at AntiFootballPod. Yeah, that's it from us. And yeah, we'll see you lot next time. Hey.